other words, secure adults' sensitivity and encouragement have the same effect on their partners as secure mothers on her infant. Enough to create a shift in their partner's attachment style. A word of caution, however. Sometimes secure people, despite their innate talent for warding off potentially unsuitable matches and making their partners more secure, can find themselves in bad relationships. This can happen not only when they're inexperienced, but also when they respond to their long-term partner's unacceptable behavior by continuing to give them the benefit of the doubt and tolerate their actions. Nathan, 35, was at his wit's end. In the 8 years since he'd married Shelley, things had gone from bad to worse. Shelley's temper tantrums, rare at first, now occurred almost daily. Her outbursts also increased in severity. She broke household objects, and on one occasion even slapped him. But the problems in the relationship didn't end there. Nathan not only caught her having online affairs, but strongly suspected that she was having real-life ones as well. Though Shelley threatened to leave many times, almost as if she was testing Nathan's patience and tolerance, she didn't pick up and move out. He was sure that once this period was over, everything would return to normal. He also saw himself as responsible for Shelley's well-being and didn't want to abandon her when she was going through such a rough patch. So he put up with the abuse and the affairs. Finally, Shelley announced that she no longer loved him, had met someone else, and was ending the marriage. Once Shelley decided to leave, Nathan accepted her decision and didn't try to win her back. Now, with the divorce behind him, Nathan is relieved that Shelley took matters into her own hands and freed him from a difficult existence. He's even open to meeting a new person and making her a part of his life. But he still finds it hard to explain what kept him there for so long. Attachment theory offers an explanation. For one, as we've seen, people with a secure attachment style view their partner's well-being as their responsibility. As long as they have reason to believe their partner is in some sort of trouble, they'll continue to back him or her. Mario Mikulincer and Philip Shaver, in their book, Attachment in Adulthood, show that people with a secure attachment style are more likely than others to forgive their partner for wrongdoing. They explain this as a complex combination of cognitive and emotional abilities. Forgiveness requires difficult regulatory maneuvers, understanding a transgressor's needs and motives, and making generous attributions and appraisals concerning the transgressor's traits and hurtful actions. Secure people are likely to offer relatively benign explanations of their partner's hurtful actions and be inclined to forgive the partner. Also, as we've heard previously in this chapter, secure people just naturally dwell less on the negative and can turn off upsetting emotions without becoming defensively distant. The good news is that people with a secure attachment style have healthy instincts and usually catch on very early that someone is not cut out to be their partner. The bad news is that when secure people do, on occasion, enter into a negative relationship, they might not know when to call it quits, especially if it's a long-term committed relationship in which they feel responsible for their partner's happiness. How can you tell if things have gone too far? If you're secure but start to feel agitated, worried, or jealous, anxious traits, or if you find yourself thinking twice before expressing your feelings, or are becoming less trusting of, or starting to play games with your partner, avoidant traits, it's a huge warning sign, and very likely that you're with the wrong person, or that you've been through a difficult experience that has shaken the core of your secure foundation. Life events, such as the loss of a loved one, an illness, or a divorce, can cause such a shift. If you're still in the relationship, remember that just because you can get along with anyone doesn't mean you have to. If you're unhappy after having tried every way to make things work, chances are that you should move on. It's in your best interest to end a dysfunctional relationship rather than get stuck forever with the wrong person just because you're secure. If you've experienced loss of an attachment figure for whatever reason, remember that it wasn't your set of beliefs that were to blame, and it is well worth holding on to them. It is better to find a way to heal the wounds and maintain the hope that there are other people out there who share your need for intimacy and closeness. You can be happy again. A final word of recognition for the secures of this world. Before we learned about attachment theory, we took the secures of the world for granted and even dismissed them as boring. But, looking through the attachment prism, we've come to appreciate secure people's talents and abilities. The goofy, Homer Simpson-like colleague whom we barely noticed was suddenly transformed into a guy with impressive relationship talent who treats his wife admirably. And our get-a-life neighbor suddenly became a perceptive, caring person who keeps the entire family emotionally in check. But not all secure people are homebodies or goofy. You are not settling by going secure. Secures come in all shapes and forms. Many are good-looking and sexy. Whether plain or gorgeous, we've learned to appreciate them all for what they really are, the supermates of evolution. And we hope that you will too. Part 3. When Attachment Styles Clash. Chapter 8. The Anxious Avoidant Trap. When the two people in a couple have colliding intimacy needs, their relationship is likely to become more of a storm-tossed voyage than a safe haven. Here are three examples of what we mean. The Dirty Laundry. Janet, 37, and Mark, 40, have been living together for almost 8 years. For the past 2 years, they've been having an ongoing dispute about whether to buy a washing machine. Mark is strongly in favor. It will save them a lot of time and hassle. Janet is adamantly opposed. Their Manhattan apartment is tiny, and fitting in another appliance will mean cramping their style even more. Besides, as she sees it, she's responsible for the laundry, so why is Mark making such a big deal about it? When they discuss the subject, they both become highly emotional, and it usually ends by Janet clamming up or Mark exploding. What are they fighting about? To get at the real issue, let's add the following piece of information to the equation. When Janet does the laundry, it's on weekends, and she goes to her sister's place around the block. This is the sensible thing to do. Her sister has a washing machine. It's free and less trouble. She then idles away the entire day there. Janet has an avoidant attachment style and is always finding opportunities to do things without Mark. For Mark, who has an anxious attachment style, the desire for a washing machine is really a wish for something else altogether, to be close to Janet. When viewed in this light, we can see that the washing machine dispute is only a symptom of the real issue, the fact that Mark and Janet have very different needs when it comes to closeness and spending time together. A Romantic Bed and Breakfast in Vermont. Susan, 24, and Paul, 28, decide to go on a spontaneous weekend trip to Vermont. When they get there, they check out two B&Bs. Both places are cozy and inviting. One has a room with two single beds, and the other has a room with one large queen-size bed. Paul wants the room with the two single beds because the view is spectacular. Susan wants the one with the large bed. She can't imagine going on a romantic getaway and having to sleep in a separate bed. Paul is a little dismissive of Susan. "We sleep in the same bed every night. What's the big deal? At least we can enjoy the view here." Susan feels ashamed that she has this strong need to be close to Paul at night. But still, she just can't imagine them sleeping in separate beds on their vacation. Neither wants to give in, and the argument threatens to spoil the weekend. What is this disagreement about? On the face of it, a difference in taste when it comes to hotel rooms. Susan's insistence seems a bit extreme, but what if you knew that Paul hates to cuddle with her before going to sleep? That this bothers Susan greatly, and that she feels rejected by his behavior. What if you knew that she's sure that with two separate beds, he will rush to his own the minute the sex is over? In this fuller context, she doesn't seem so unreasonable anymore. We can interpret her concern as a fundamental need for closeness that is going unmet. When Facebook and abandonment issues meet. Naomi, 33, and Kevin, 30, have been seeing each other exclusively for 6 months and have a couple of disagreements they can't resolve. Naomi is upset that Kevin hasn't unfriended a couple of ex-girlfriends from his list on Facebook. She is convinced he is flirting with other women. Kevin, on the other hand, doesn't like the fact that Naomi makes a habit of calling him whenever he's out having drinks with his pals, so he screens her calls. Kevin believes that Naomi has serious abandonment issues and is overly jealous, and he frequently tells her so. Naomi tries to control her gnawing doubts and worries, but they just won't go away. There is no hard and fast relationship rule about keeping ex-girlfriends on your Facebook account or remaining in touch with them. There is also no right or wrong when it comes to phoning your boyfriend when he's out with friends. In certain situations, these behaviors might make perfect sense, but Naomi and Kevin's disagreements are not really about these questions at all, and that is why they're unable to reach a resolution. Their conflict is about how close and committed they want to be to each other. Kevin, who has an avoidant attachment style, wants to keep a certain distance between himself and Naomi, and he does so using various strategies. He remains secretive about his comings and goings, and he stays in touch with old flames despite Naomi's obvious discomfort. Naomi, for her part, tries to get closer to Kevin by eliminating the barriers and distractions he has placed between them. But without his genuine desire to get closer, her efforts are futile. After all, it takes two willing individuals to create intimacy. All three cases we've described have one thing in common. While one partner truly wants intimacy, the other feels very uncomfortable when things become too close. This is often the case when one of the partners in a bond is avoidant and the other is either anxious or secure, but it's most pronounced when one partner is avoidant and the other is anxious. Research on attachment repeatedly shows that when your need for intimacy is met and reciprocated by your partner, your satisfaction level will rise. Incongruent intimacy needs, on the other hand, usually translate into substantially lower satisfaction. When couples disagree about the degree of closeness and intimacy desired in a relationship, the issue eventually threatens to dominate all of their dialogue. We call this situation the anxious-avoidant trap. Because like a trap, you fall into it with no awareness, and like a trap, once you're caught, it's hard to break free. The reason people in an anxious-avoidant relationship find it particularly hard to move toward more security is primarily because they are trapped in a cycle of exacerbating each other's insecurities. People with an anxious attachment style cope with threats to the relationship by activating their attachment system, trying to get close to their partner. People who are avoidant have the opposite reaction. They cope with threats by deactivating, taking measures to distance themselves from their partners and turn off their attachment system. Thus, the closer the anxious tries to get, the more distant the avoidant acts. To make matters worse, one partner's activation further reinforces the other's deactivation in a vicious cycle, and they both remain within the relationship danger zone. In order to move toward more security, both members of the couple need to find a way to feel less threatened, get less activated or deactivated, and get out of the danger zone. Telltale signs of the anxious-avoidant trap. 1. The roller coaster effect. In the relationship, you never sail along on an even keel. Instead, every once in a while when the avoidant partner makes him or herself available to the anxious partner, the latter's attachment system is temporarily quieted and you achieve extreme closeness, leading to the feeling of a high. This closeness, however, is perceived as a threat by the avoidant partner and is quickly followed by withdrawal on his or her part, only to create renewed dissatisfaction for the anxious partner, 2. The emotional counterbalancing act. If you're avoidant, you often inflate your self-esteem and sense of independence in comparison to someone else. If you're anxious, you're programmed to feel less than when your attachment system gets activated. Frequently, avoidants feel independent and powerful only to the extent that their partner feels needy and incapable. This is one of the main reasons avoidants hardly ever date one another. They can't feel strong and independent in relation to someone who shares the same sentiment as they do. 3. Stable instability. The relationship may last for a long time, but an element of uncertainty persists. You may remain together, but with a feeling of chronic dissatisfaction, never finding the degree of intimacy you are both comfortable with. 4. Are we really fighting about this? You may feel you're constantly fighting about things you shouldn't be fighting about at all. In fact, your fights aren't about these minor problems, but about something else altogether, the amount of intimacy between you. 5. Life in the inner circle as the enemy. If you are anxious, you find that you're getting treated worse instead of better once you become the person closest to the avoidant partner. We'll explore this further in the next chapter. 6. Experiencing the trap. You develop the eerie sense that the relationship is not right for you, but you feel too emotionally connected to the other person to leave. Why are intimacy differences so difficult to reconcile? If two people are in love, can't they find a way to be together and work out their differences? We wish the answer was a simple yes, but we've often seen that it's impossible to find a resolution acceptable to both the anxious partner and the avoidant partner, regardless of how much love they feel for each other. Typically, if the relationship runs its usual course, we will show you later that this does not have to be so. Despite differing intimacy needs, the anxious partner is usually the one who has to make concessions and accept the rules imposed by the avoidant partner. So, even if the relationship is left to its own devices and lasts for a long time, in a stably unstable manner, without an attempt to steer it toward a secure place, things don't usually get better, and may get worse. Here's why. Intimacy differences can spill over into more and more areas of life. Radically different intimacy needs don't stop with seemingly trivial matters like one person wanting to hold hands more often than the other. These differences reflect diametrically opposed desires, assumptions, and attitudes. In fact, they affect almost every aspect of a shared life, from the way you sleep together to how you raise your children. With every new development in the relationship, getting married, having kids, moving to a new home, making money, or becoming ill, these basic differences will manifest themselves, and the gap between partners may widen as the challenges become greater. Conflict is often left unresolved because the resolution itself creates too much intimacy. If you are anxious or secure, you genuinely want to work out a relationship problem. However, the resolution itself often brings a couple closer together. This is a scenario that, however unconsciously, the avoidant partner wants to avoid. While people with an anxious or secure attachment style seek to resolve a disagreement to achieve greater emotional closeness, this outcome is uncomfortable for the avoidant, who actually seeks to remain distant. In order to dodge the possibility of getting closer, avoidants tend to grow more hostile and distant as arguments progress. Unless there is recognition of the process involved in an anxious-avoidant conflict, the distancing during conflict tends to repeat itself and causes a lot of unhappiness. Without addressing the issue, the situation can go from bad to worse. With every clash, the anxious person loses more ground. During bitter fights between anxious and avoidant partners, when there are no secure checks and balances in place, people with anxious attachment style tend to get overwhelmed by negative emotions. When they feel hurt, they talk, think, and act in an extreme manner, even to the point of threatening to leave, protest behavior. However, once they calm down, they become flooded with positive memories and then overcome with regret. They reach out to their partner in an attempt to reconcile, but they are often met with a hostile response because avoidants react differently to a fight. They turn off all attachment-related memories and remember the worst of their partner. What often happens at this point, if you are anxious, is that you not only fail to resolve the original conflict, but now find yourself in a worse position than you were in the first place. Now you have to plead just to return to your initial unsatisfactory status quo, and often have to compromise for less. Any hopes for a better life together get washed down the drain. Chapter 9. Escaping the Anxious Avoidant Trap. How the Anxious Avoidant Couple Can Find Greater Security. If you've discovered that most of your difficulties can actually be traced back to conflicting intimacy needs, is there anything you can do about it? Perhaps one of the most intriguing findings in adult attachment research is that attachment styles are stable but plastic. This means that they tend to stay consistent over time, but they can also change. Up to now, we've described in detail what happens in anxious-avoidant relationships when left to run their usual course. Here, we want to offer these couples a chance to work together to become more secure. Attachment research shows that people tend to become more secure when they are in a relationship with someone secure. But there is also hope for a couple's future when neither partner is secure. Studies have found that security priming, reminding people of security-enhancing experiences they've had, can help them to create a greater sense of security. When people can recall a past relationship with a secure person, or be inspired by a secure role model in their lives, they are often successful at adopting secure ways. A person's attachment style gradually changes toward greater security. He or she behaves more constructively in relationships and even enjoys better mental and physical health. And if both partners are able to do so, the results can be remarkable. Identifying your integrated, secure role model. Priming for security can be as simple as thinking about secure people around you and how they behave in their relationships. To find such a role model, mentally review the various people in your life, past and present. The secure presence can be someone close, like a parent or a sibling, or it may be someone you know more casually from work or through friends. What's important is that this person has a secure attachment style and a secure way of dealing with people. Once you've come up with one or more such people, try to conjure specific images and recollections of the way they interact in the world, the kinds of things they say, how they act in different situations, what they choose to ignore, and what they respond to, the way they behave when their partner is feeling down, and their general outlook on life and relationships. For example, once when I disagreed with my manager, I came out very strongly against him. He showed a genuine interest in what I had to say and created a dialogue with me instead of a dueling match. My best friend John and his wife Laura are always encouraging each other to do things that they are passionate about. When Laura decided to leave her law firm and go into social work, John was the first to give her his blessing, even though it meant a serious financial cutback. Your relationship with your pet as a secure role model? Suzanne Phillips, co-author of the book Healing Together, describes our connection with our pets as a source of inspiration for our romantic relationships. In her writing, she points out that we tend to perceive our pets as selfless and loving, despite their many misdemeanors. They wake us up at night, destroy our valuables, and demand our undivided attention, yet we tend to overlook these behaviors and feel positively toward them. In fact, our connection with our pets is an excellent example of a secure presence in our lives. We can tap into our attitudes toward our pets as a secure resource within us. We don't assume our pets are doing things purposely to hurt us. We don't hold grudges, even when they eat something they shouldn't or make a mess. We still greet them warmly when we come home, even after a rough day at the office, and we stick by them no matter what. Go over all the secure examples that you've come up with, and summarize the characteristics that you would like to adopt. This will become your integrated, secure role model. This is what you want to strive for. Reshaping your working models. In attachment research, working model is a phrase that describes our basic belief system when it comes to romantic relationships. What gets you going? What shuts you down? Your attitudes and expectations. In short, what makes you tick in relationships? It is helpful to understand the ins and outs of your working model as a first step toward identifying patterns of thoughts, feelings, and actions that stand in the way of your becoming more secure. Creating your relationship inventory. The first order of business, therefore, is to become aware of the working model that governs your relationship behavior. Although you might have a good idea about your attractive style from what you've heard so far, the relationship inventory will help you see more clearly how your attachment style affects your day-to-day thoughts, feelings, and behaviors in romantic situations. The inventory will walk you through your past and present relationships from an attachment perspective. Research into the molecular mechanism of memory and learning reveals that whenever we recall a scene or retrieve a certain memory to our conscious mind, we disrupt it, and by doing so, we alter it forever. Our memories are not like old books in the library, lying there dusty and unchanged. They are rather like a living, breathing entity. What we remember today of our past is in fact a product of editing and reshaping that occurs over the years whenever we recall that particular memory. In other words, our current experiences shape our view of our past ones. By creating your own attachment inventory, you re-examine your recollections of past relationship experiences from a fresh, new perspective. Viewing them through an attachment lens will allow you to change some unhelpful beliefs that rely on those particular memories, and by doing so, reshape your working model into a more secure one. What comes next is the attachment relationship inventory. Taking the inventory is a task that should be done alone. Make sure to set aside enough quiet time to work on it thoroughly, so you really get a complete and accurate picture of yourself from an attachment perspective. You'll need to make a chart with 7 columns. Start by listing, in the left-hand column, number 1, the names of all your romantic partners, past and present. These can include people you've dated briefly. We suggest working vertically, one column at a time. Completing the inventory vertically encourages you to focus less on each particular scenario and to achieve an integrated picture of your working model across relationships. The more information you gather, the better. In column 2, write what you remember about the relationship. What was it like? And what things stand out most when you try to recall your time together? Once you write down your general recollections of the relationship, column 3 allows you to take a closer look and identify specific scenarios that contribute to activation or deactivation of your attachment system. Column 4 asks how you responded to these situations. What did you do? What were you thinking? How did you feel? We'll offer lists that will help you recall these reactions. Column 5 is a crucial next step. You will need to reassess these experiences from an attachment perspective to gain insight into the issues that affected your relationships. What attachment issues underlie your reactions? Protest behavior? Deactivation? Refer to the upcoming lists as a guide. In column 6, you're asked to consider ways in which your reaction, now translated into attachment principles, hurts you and gets in the way of your happiness. Finally, column 7 prompts you to consider new, secure ways of handling these situations using a security-enhancing role model in your life and the secure principles we outline in this audiobook. To summarize each of your columns, number 1, name of partner. Number 2, what is or was the relationship like? What recurrent patterns can you recall? Column 3, situation that triggered activation or deactivation of attachment system. Column 4, my reaction, thoughts, feelings, actions. Column 5, insecure attachment working models and principles. Column 6, how I lose out by succumbing to these working models and principles. Column 7, identify a secure role model who is relevant to this situation and secure principles to adopt. How is he or she relevant? To help recall reactions, here's a list of common anxious thoughts, emotions, and reactions. Thoughts. Mind reading. That's it. I know she or he's leaving me. I'll never find anyone else. I knew this was too good to last. All or nothing thinking. I've ruined everything. There's nothing I can do to mend the situation. She or he can't treat me this way. I'll show him or her. I knew something would go wrong. Nothing ever works out right for me. I have to talk to or see him or her right now. She or he'd better come crawling back to beg my forgiveness. Otherwise, she or he can forget about me forever. Maybe if I look drop-dead gorgeous or act seductive, things will work out. She or he is so amazing. Why would she or he want to be with me anyway? Remembering all the good things your partner ever did and said after calming down from a fight. Recalling only the bad things your partner has ever done when you're fighting. Emotions. Sad, resentful, angry, frustrated, fearful, depressed, hopeless, humiliated, despairing, hate-filled, jealous, uncertain, hostile, agitated, vengeful, rejected, guilty, unloved, self-loathing, lonely, restless, misunderstood, uneasy, unappreciated. Actions. Act out. Attempt to reestablish contact at any cost. Pick a fight. Wait for them to make the first reconciliation move. Threaten to leave. Act hostile. Roll your eyes, look disdainful. Try to make him or her feel jealous. Act busy or unapproachable. Withdraw. Stop talking to your partner or turn away from him or her physically. Act manipulatively. To help recall reactions, here's a list of common avoidant thoughts, emotions, and reactions. Thoughts. All or nothing thinking. I knew she or he wasn't right for me. This proves it. Overgeneralizing. I knew I wasn't made to be in a close relationship. He's taking over my life. I can't take it. Now I have to do everything his or her way. The price is too high. I need to get out of here. I feel suffocated. If she or he was the one, this kind of thing wouldn't happen. When I was with Phantom X, this wouldn't have happened. Malicious intent. He's really out to annoy me. It's so obvious. He just wants to tie me down. This isn't true love. Fantasize about having sex with other people. I'll be better off on my own. Ugh, she's so needy. It's pathetic. Emotions. Withdrawn. Misunderstood. Frustrated. Resentful. Angry. Hostile. Pressured. Aloof. Unappreciated. Empty. Deceived. Despairing. Tense. Scornful. Hate-filled. Restless. Self-righteous. Distrustful. Contemptuous. Actions. Act out. get up and leave, belittle your partner, act hostile, look disdainful, make critical remarks, withdraw mentally or physically, minimize physical contact, keep emotional sharing to a minimum, stop listening to your partner, ignore him or her. Here is a list of possible attachment principles at play. Anxious, protest behavior, activating strategies, any thought, feeling, or behavior that will result in an increased desire to reconnect, putting your partner on a pedestal, feeling small and inferior in comparison to your partner, seeing, remembering only the best in your partner after a fight while forgetting his or her negative side, mistaking an activated attachment system for love, living in the danger zone, living on an emotional roller coaster, getting addicted to the highs and lows. Avoidant. Deactivating strategies. Mistaking self-reliance for independence. Inflating your own importance and self-esteem while putting your partners down. Seeing only the negative in your partner and ignoring the positive. Assuming malicious intent in your partner's actions. Disregarding your partner's emotional cues. Yearning for the Phantom X. Fantasizing about the One. Repressing loving feelings and emotions. Examples of secure principles. Be available. Don't interfere. Act encouragingly. Communicate effectively. Don't play games. View yourself as responsible for your partner's well-being. Wear your heart on your sleeve. Be courageous and honest in your interactions. Maintain focus on the problem at hand. Don't make generalizations during conflict. Douse the flame before it becomes a forest fire. Attend to your partner's upsets before they escalate. It sometimes may be helpful to go over the inventory with an attachment-designated person, ADP, such as a family member, a close friend, or a therapist. Being able to turn to someone who is familiar with your patterns when your system goes into overdrive and your judgment is clouded by activation or deactivation can give you a new and different perspective. Your ADP can remind you of your destructive attachment tendencies and help you move toward a more secure emotional headspace before you act out and hurt the relationship. If you've completed the relationship inventory, you have identified your working model and the ways in which it may interfere with your happiness and productivity. You've probably spotted the recurrent patterns in your relationships and the way in which you and your partners, past or present, tick each other off. You can even summarize these for yourself. My working model, summarizing the inventory. Can you identify particular situations that are prone to activate, if you are anxious, or deactivate, if you are avoidant, your attachment system across relationships? Can you detect ways in which an inefficient working model has prevented you from achieving more security? What are the main attachment principles at play in your relationships? Go back to your inventory and ask yourself how the secure role models, or integrated secure role model, can shed new light on the relationship issues you are or were dealing with. What would they do if they were in such a situation? Which point of view would they bring to the table? What would they tell you if they knew you were dealing with this issue? How is your experience with them relevant to the situation? The answer to these questions will help you complete the last and crucial column of the inventory. The next two examples will allow you to better understand how this approach can work and how to use the inventory. The text message that saved the day. When we interviewed Georgia and Henry for the audiobook, they were constantly quarreling. According to Henry, nothing he ever did was good enough for Georgia, and he was always being judged and criticized. Georgia, for her part, believed that the onus of the marriage was on her. She had to run after Henry to make even simple plans, and was always the one to initiate everything, from a birthday party present for his mother to deciding which apartment to rent. She felt very alone in the partnership. When we encouraged Georgia to start monitoring her working model, which was clearly anxious, she came up with a particular situation that occurred frequently and always upset her. Henry never had time to talk to her during the workday. She would call and leave a message, but he would rarely get back to her. Georgia's inventory included the following entry, beginning with column 1. Name, Henry. Column 2. What is or was the relationship like? What recurrent patterns can you recall? I feel that I'm alone and uncared for in this relationship. I'm tired of doing most of the relationship work on my own. Column 3. Situation that triggered activation or deactivation of attachment system. Henry not returning calls throughout the workday. Column 4. Thoughts, feelings, actions. Feel anxious and restless. Wonder if I've done something to anger Henry. Stomach in a knot. Call incessantly or force myself to wait for him to call me. Act hostile when he phones. Column 5. Insecure attachment working models and principles. Activation, the feeling of anxiety and unrest, and the need to talk to Henry right now are my attachment system's way of getting me to remain close to Henry. Protest behavior, acting hostile when Henry calls, is my way of getting Henry to really pay attention to me and try to make up with me. Column 6. How I lose out by succumbing to these working models and principles. Instead of connecting with Henry, I end up fighting with him. Also, worrying about his availability hurts my concentration at work, and this happens even though I know he loves me. Column 7. Identify a secure role model who is relevant to the situation and secure principles to adopt. How is she or he relevant? Debbie, my therapist, who was a great secure presence in my life, told me to call her whenever I was upset. She said, Georgia, I'd rather spend 10 minutes on the phone with you than have you go upset all day. I never ended up having to call her. It was her availability that was important. I think I don't really need to talk to Henry so many times. My real need is to know that he's available and connected. By calling Henry many times, I am also violating the secure base rule of non-interference. Henry, who has an avoidant attachment style, was busy at work with patients and would get frustrated by Georgia's incoming calls and text messages. When he eventually returned her calls, the dialogue would start off on a sour note that would affect the entire course of the conversation. This is what part of his inventory looked like. Column 1. Name, Georgia. Column 2. What is or was the relationship like? What recurrent patterns can you recall? There is never peace and quiet in our relationship. Georgia is very demanding of attention. Column 3. Situation that triggered activation or deactivation of attachment system. Georgia's repeated phone calls and text messages when I'm busy at work. Column 4. My reaction, thoughts, feelings, actions. Feel frustrated. Get angry thinking about how needy Georgia is. Turn off my cell phone or answer her calls curtly and irritably. Column 5. Insecure attachment working models and principles. Deactivation. View Georgia as needy and overdependent. Forget that she's not out to get me and that she loves me and cares about me. Withdrawal. I distance myself by turning off the phone or acting hostile when we eventually talk. Column 6. How I lose out by succumbing to these working models and principles. When I get home, Georgia is upset and I feel guilty. Also, often she's calling for a good reason, like which restaurant I'd like her to reserve for tonight, and I lose out by ignoring her. Column 7. Identify a secure role model who is relevant to this situation and secure principles to adopt. How is she or he relevant? My boss and his wife always check in with each other. They are this power couple at the hospital, both division chiefs. She even calls to make sure his schedule leaves him enough time for exercise. They really help each other succeed. I'm also violating the secure base rule of availability. I need to find a way to be available for Georgia when she needs me. Once both Georgia and Henry analyzed their working models, they started viewing their situation differently. Henry realized that by ignoring his wife's needs and ridiculing her dependency, he was only making matters worse and causing unhappiness in the relationship. Georgia realized that by using protest behavior, she was actually distancing Henry instead of making him want to be there for her, as she assumed. When they sat down and talked about this recurrent issue, they were both better prepared. Henry said that although he did think about her during the day, he was so busy that he just didn't have time to stop and call. It was reassuring for Georgia to hear that Henry often thought about her when they were apart. She also understood his busy schedule. She just knew that she needed to feel more connected throughout the day. Then they found a cool solution. Henry asked if it would be okay to send her a pre-written text message whenever he thought about her. It would only take a moment of his time, but would reduce Georgia's worry greatly. This solution worked wonders for the relationship. For Georgia, receiving a "thinking of you" message enabled her to calm down and concentrate better at work, and Henry felt less resentful once he realized that Georgia wasn't out to destroy his career by endless nagging. In fact, by invoking his boss's special relationship with his wife, he could see how a secure base could help advance his career. At night, when they met, the tension was gone, and the neediness and hostility were no longer there. The toothpaste incident. Sam really wanted Grace to move in with them when she moved to New York City. They'd been together for over 2 years, and he thought that it would be nice to take the relationship to a higher level. Besides, they were staying at each other's place all the time, and think of the rent they would save. Grace preferred not to move into Sam's apartment. She wanted to rent a bigger place instead, where they could both start on equal footing. But Sam refused. He loved his little apartment and saw no reason to spend money when he owned a place of his own. He was sure that they could make it work. He did have some hesitations, though. He'd never lived with anyone before, and he was very set in his ways. But over the years, he'd also felt the loneliness that comes with self-sufficiency and wanted something more. That's when Grace moved in. Sam started to feel the pressure mounting. Sometimes he felt he was going to suffocate. Her things were everywhere. He felt that he was losing his quiet sanctuary and, quite literally, that his home had been invaded. Finally, one day, he lost it. It was about the toothpaste. Grace always squeezed the toothpaste from the middle, while he made sure to carefully squeeze it from the bottom up. When he noticed the distorted toothpaste tube, he became furious and told Grace that she was sloppy and careless. Grace was caught off guard. She'd been trying very hard to make her presence in the apartment unobtrusive, and an attack was the last thing she expected. A while later, after thinking things over, Sam made the following revelations. Column 1, name. Grace. Column 2, what is or was the relationship like? What recurrent patterns can you recall? I thought we got along well. Now I'm not so sure anymore. Maybe I'm not cut out for living with someone else. Column 3, situation that triggered activation or deactivation of attachment system. Grace moving into my place, making changes and doing things her own way. The toothpaste business being the last straw. Column 4. My reactions. Thoughts, feelings, actions. Get upset and angry. Think moving in with Grace was all a big mistake. I feel like a stranger in my own home. I'm trapped. Find fault with everything Grace does. Think how incapable she is. Sulk a lot. Column 5. Insecure attachment working models and principles. Deactivation. View grace as incompetent and intruding. Repress loving feelings. Forget how important it was for me to move in together and how unhappy and lonely I've been in the past. 6. How I lose out by succumbing to these working models and principles. I want her to do everything my way in the house, which makes her tense, and the tension is contagious. I'm risking my relationship with Grace and hurting the only partner I've ever really cared about. Living alone will be like going back to square one. I was lonely and unhappy. That's why I went to therapy. It was through my work in therapy that I was able to get into this relationship. 7. Identify a secure role model who is relevant to this situation and secure principles to adopt. How is she or he relevant? My therapist said to just give it time, not to come out with any grand statements about not being cut out to live with someone. It's an adjustment. My best friend has been living with his partner for more than a year now. They go food shopping together and do other household chores in tandem. I was very jealous of them before Grace moved in with me. I'm violating the secure base rule of non-interference. This place is new for her. I need to be supportive and not make her feel bad. And this is Grace's inventory. Column 1. Name. Sam. Column 2. What is or was the relationship like? What recurrent patterns can you recall? I don't know what's happened lately. We were getting along so well, but since I moved in, he's been acting distant and mean. I knew we should have gotten a place that was new for us both. Column 3. Situation that triggered activation or deactivation of attachment system. Living together and being constantly criticized. Column 4. My reaction. Thoughts, feelings, actions. I feel that everything I do is wrong. I'm convinced he doesn't love me anymore. Why did I move in with him? I've been reduced to acting like a guest in my own home. Now I'm trapped. I feel very inadequate. Am I really such a slob? I think we won't be able to survive this. We'll probably break up soon. Column 5. Insecure attachment working models and principles. Generalizing a specific scenario onto the entire relationship. Putting myself down. Jumping to the relationship is over conclusion. Being immersed in negative memories and emotions. Column 6. How I lose out by succumbing to these working models and principles. Again, I will create a self-fulfilling prophecy. I will act hostile and be upset and unpleasant until the relationship will really be over. I can't think about a specific solution when I see things so extremely. Column 7. Identify a secure role model who is relevant to this situation and secure principles to adopt. How is she or he relevant? My sister made a good point. She said that Sam lives and works from home, and I'm around a lot. Maybe it's too much all at once. It won't hurt to have a buffer zone to gradually ease us into living together. People need time to adjust. She said that when she first moved in with her now husband, they also went through a period of adjustment. I'm violating the secure base rule of supportiveness. I need to be more supportive. This is harder for him than it is for me. After doing this inventory, Sam realized that years of living alone and believing in his own self-sufficiency were now being challenged head-on. He was overwhelmed and discussed his new understanding with Grace. Grace realized that she was threatened by the fact that Sam was having difficulty adjusting to her presence. She also saw how he was interpreting the situation and reacting to it in a way that was harming the relationship. She liked her sister's idea of finding a buffer zone. Since Grace's close friend was going out of town for 6 months, Grace brought up the idea of subletting her friend's studio apartment for a while so she would have a place of her own to do her artwork and other hobbies without worrying about Sam's reaction. Sam was surprised at her suggestion. knowing that grace now had an alternative, made a huge difference to him. All at once, he no longer felt suffocated and was less bothered by the changes she made. After 6 months, during which time Grace barely ever actually stayed at her sublet apartment, she didn't bother to look for another sublet. Sam and she had adjusted to living together. Make becoming secure an ongoing growth process. Remember that attachment styles are stable and plastic. Becoming more secure is an ongoing process. Whenever a new concern, dissatisfaction, or conflict occurs, enter the new information. This will help in your quest to break your insecure patterns. But moving toward security is not only about tackling problems in your relationship. It's also about having fun together. Find ways to enjoy your time together as a couple. A walk in the park, a movie and dinner, watching a TV show that you both like, and make time to be physically close. Shedding your insecure working model will do wonders for your ability to function in the world at large. Dr. Sue Johnson, the founder of Emotionally Focused Couples Therapy, EFT, has demonstrated through her clinical work and writings that creating true security in the relationship and recognizing that you are emotionally dependent on your partner on every level is the best way to improve your romantic bond. When you build a secure relationship, both individuals win. If you are the anxious partner, you get the closeness you crave. And if you're the avoidant partner, you'll enjoy much more of the independence you need. What if the goal of security is not reached? What happens if, despite your efforts to move your relationship away from the trap and the vicious, insecure cycle, you are unable to do so? This can happen either because there is no genuine wish to change on the part of one or both partners, or your attempts fail. We believe that when people are in an anxious, avoidant relationship, especially when they are unable to move to greater security, these discrepancies will always be a part of their lives and will never completely disappear. But we also strongly believe that knowledge is power. And it can be very valuable to know that your ongoing struggles as a couple are not because either of you is crazy, but rather because your relationship has a built-in clash that is not going to go away. One of the most important benefits of this insight has to do with your self-perception. Intimacy clashes are very destructive for the non-avoidant partner, who is constantly being pushed away by the avoidant partner. We can see this happening in the examples we cite throughout the audiobook, in behaviors such as maintaining a high degree of secrecy and then blaming the other person for being jealous and needy, in preferring separate beds, and in finding ways to spend less time together. If you are with an avoidant partner, you are constantly being rejected and rebuffed. After experiencing these distancing strategies for a while, you start to blame yourself. You may believe that if your partner was with someone else, she or he would act differently. That with another, she or he surely would want to be closer than with you. You begin to feel unattractive and inadequate. Understanding that your continual arguments actually have a hidden subtext to them, that they genuinely are irresolvable, changes your perception of your own role dramatically. Once you understand that your partner will always find areas of contention as a way of maintaining distance, and that she or he will always need to withdraw, no matter whom she or he is with, you will no longer blame yourself for the relationship problems. At least on the surface, the avoidant partner gets hurt less, because withdrawal is a one-sided move that doesn't necessitate cooperation from your partner. However, although seemingly unperturbed, an important lesson to be learned is that indifference does not connote security. Avoidants need to actively suppress their attachment needs, but tend to report being less happy in relationships, though they often blame their unhappiness on their partner. But how do people live with this understanding? When we interviewed Elena, she told us about her relationship with her ex-husband, Stan. She recounted how they were able to find some stability in the relationship as long as Stan worked most of the time. And on weekends, they did various separate chores and spent very little downtime together. But things became more difficult whenever Elena would ask him to go on a romantic getaway